This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, in association with NoleDigest.com. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and we're joined today by Mike McAllister from QsNation.com, who's Mike is going to fill us in on the full poop, the full scoop from Northern New York. What's going on up at Syracuse? Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on.
So the most obvious place to start seems to be talking about the Syracuse quarterback position, where obviously Terrell Hunt was going to be the guy. The offense was going to run through Terrell Hunt, fifth-year senior coming into this season. A talented guy, could a dual threat kind of kind of guy. And then he gets hurt right away, right at the beginning of the season. And now, after some other injury issues, now it seems like things have narrowed down to Eric Dungy. A kid who's a freshman, but has really flashed, shown some ability, and has competed, been a hard-nosed kid so far this year. Why don't you take us into where Syracuse is at the quarterback position?
Yeah, just like last year, Terrell Hunt goes down, and then the quarterback position becomes a giant question mark, becomes in a huge state of flux. The difference is last year, they kind of had a couple of guys you saw when they played Florida State last year in the Carrier Dome, Austin Wilson and A.J. Long, and even Mitch Kimble a little bit. Those three were almost interchangeable as far as none of them really stood out. None of them really took the reins of the backup quarterback position behind Terrell Hunt coming out of training camp and even through the first few games before Hunt got hurt. Whereas this year, Eric Dungy, as a true freshman, he grabbed the backup spot right away. So the Syracuse coaches said even before Terrell Hunt got hurt that you were probably going to see Dungy in a couple of packages here and there to try to get him on the field because of how impressive he was during training camp. So that kind of gave you a little more confidence that they had a little bit more stability behind Terrell Hunt this year. And then, of course, just a couple of plays into his senior season, after coming back from injury and rehabbing during the entire offseason, we know how hard that is, and he goes down in a non-contact injury, which makes it even more unfortunate. But Dungy has performed very well, I think exceeded expectations because he is a true freshman. He's very mobile. They run some triple option stuff with him because of his mobility, a little bit of a different runner than Terrell Hunt. Hunt's more of a physical bruiser, kind of going to try to run you over type of a guy, not really going to try to outrun you because he doesn't have that speed. Dungy's going to try to outrun you a little bit. He's getting a little bit smarter as far as sliding, running out of bounds and trying not to take the big hit, which has been a little bit of a problem for him. He's got a pretty good arm. I don't want to say he's got an elite arm strength or anything like that. No one's going to think that he's Jameis Winston throwing the ball, but he's got a pretty good arm. He's smart with the ball. He doesn't turn it over. That's been something that's a little bit surprising as a true freshman. Doesn't make a lot of those type of mistakes. Still makes some, but doesn't turn the ball over when he does it. Isn't going to force the ball into coverage, into tight windows, that type of thing. He looks for his guys in matchups. Whenever he's got Steve Ishmael one-on-one down the field, he's going to throw it up for him and trust that he'll make a play. And then he's just, you know, he's got some toughness, some grit, and some playmaking ability. And he gives Syracuse a little bit of a dynamic feel from that position, something I don't think they've really had since Donovan McNabb left Syracuse for the NFL. He's given the folks in Central New York a lot of hope for the future because of what he has shown as a true freshman. Behind him, just in case something were to happen where if Dungy has to come out for a play or a series or you know, hopefully not, fingers crossed, if he gets hurt seriously in the game, Zach Mahoney, who is a walk-on, comes in. He's got kind of the similar skill set as Eric Dungy. He's just almost like a poor man's Dungy. He's mobile. His arm strength isn't all that great. It's adequate. He's accurate. You know, he understands the offense, but he's not going to blow you away. He did play pretty well in the second half against LSU, throwing three touchdowns against them there. But I think long-term, Eric Dungy's clearly the guy, and he's given Syracuse fans something to hold on to.
Now, Syracuse isn't running exactly. They look a little bit different than they did last year. They're running a different system, pretty different different look this year, doing a lot more option. I mean, we've even seen some freeze option this year. You know, you mentioned Donovan McNabb. You know, we hadn't seen freeze option in that part of New York since Donovan McNabb, as far as I can remember. So, you know, but they've been running a lot of different option packages. It's a very different kind of setup from what Florida State fans saw from Syracuse last year offensively. Can you take us through a little bit of what Florida State fans can expect from Syracuse on offense coming in on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a brand new system. Last year it was George McDonald's system, and even though McDonald got demoted midway through the season and Lester took over, Lester still ran McDonald's system for the rest of that year. It didn't implement his until this year. So it went from, you know, a spread, predominantly zone read, a lot of bubble screens, quick passes, that type of an offense, to more of a, like you said, there's the option look, there is the triple option, the freeze option, as you said. First time we've seen that up in Central New York in a long time. They actually utilized the freeze option after setting LSU up over and over and over again in the first half. They ran the freeze option off of it in the second half for the first time and threw a 40-yard touchdown pass to Brizzly Esteem. It worked beautifully. So one of the things that Syracuse does this year that they haven't done in the past is they use, you know, play A to set up play B. It just may take them a quarter and a half to get to play B, but they're going to show you look A over and over and over again, and then they're going to counter off of it. That's sort of the basis of the offense, is to try to set you up and then counter to catch you off guard. They do want to run the ball. They want to establish it. Jordan Fredericks is the key guy there as a true freshman. He's taken over as a starting running back. He's the most dynamic and most versatile and biggest playmaker from that position for them. They've got Steve Ishmael, as I mentioned, as their number one wide receiver. Brizzly Esteem is one of the fastest guys on the team. And then the guy to keep an eye on is H-back Irvin Phillips. Because of this offense, one of the things they do is the H-back, he'll line up in the slot a lot, and then he'll also line up on the end, almost in like a tight end spot on occasion, and even come into the backfield. But they're going to run some jet sweeps with him. They're going to run some quick screens, some slants, and even some wheel routes with him to try to get him the ball in space and try to take advantage of his quickness and his speed. He's one of their best playmakers. He's been back the last few games after suffering an injury and missing three games early in the season, but he's one of their better playmakers. And then, you know, the offensive line has been coming along and been better in the last couple of games. They're going to give you, like you said, a variety of looks, and they're going to try to lull you to sleep a little bit with one look that they keep showing you over and over, and then counter it. That's kind of the basis for the offense. But they throw the ball downfield more than they did last year, and they're going to run the ball with the quarterback on designed runs a little bit more than they did last year.
Yeah, and those downfield passes, I mean, they're sort of a piece with the overall philosophy, running more option, running some of that. They're going to expect to do more in terms of play action and expect to, you know, put a little bit more pressure on those safeties and so on to come up and try to stop the run, and then they'll try to catch you going deep a little bit. And they had some success against LSU doing that. They got, you know, they hit for a couple big plays against LSU doing that. And again, they've got Steve Ishmael seems to be, as far as I could tell, when I've watched, he seems to be the bell cow at the wide receiver position. The guy that, you know, the kid from Florida can run pretty well and has some size to him. And then Esteem seems to be another guy that they've gone after or they've gone to there. And I should mention what I mentioned earlier. I should have explained this earlier. I mentioned the freeze option earlier, and some of the listeners out there may not be as familiar with that terminology. The freeze option is a series based off of the standard triple option. Now, with the standard triple option, the quarterback, you know, turns out from the center and then potentially gives the ball to the dive back. In the freeze option, the quarterback reverse pivots out from under center. And it's sort of it, like Mike said, it's a counter, so that it goes the opposite direction from what a normal option would you'd expect a normal option to do, and then tries to flank on that opposite side to catch teams over pursuing. But anyway, let's get back to the passing game. Can you go ahead and reintroduce Florida State to the major players on what to expect and what matchups we're going to be seeing in the passing game from Syracuse?
Yeah, like you said, Steve Ishmael is the clear number one wide receiver. He's their best playmaker from that position. Honestly, he was last year as a true freshman. He's 6'2", 6'3". He's not an elite speed guy, but he's fast enough to get downfield. Syracuse trusts him in one-on-one matchups regardless of who the corner is. You saw that last year when they threw the ball. Whenever Florida State covered him one-on-one, they threw the ball up there. They had a couple of touchdown passes to him. You know, some mixed results as well. Florida State won some of those battles clearly, but they trust him, and they think he can go up and get the ball. They like to throw jump balls to him. They also like to throw, you know, comeback routes to him, let him catch the ball, and then try to turn up field and make a play. They like him with the ball in his hands, and so he's someone that they try to get the ball to, you know, 5, 6, 7 catches a game, somewhere in that range, because he's their most consistent target from that position. He's got really good hands. Like I said, he's not going to blow you away speed-wise. He's not going to run by people, but he will catch anything that's thrown at his hands. Really high points the ball well, so when you throw jump balls to him, he's pretty good as far as his ball skills go. But the other guy to keep an eye on is Brizzly Esteem. He's a smaller guy. You know, he's 5'9", I think he's listed at, and that might be slightly generous, but he's got big-time speed, probably the fastest guy of the regulars that play. He's a guy that, you know, they'll try to maybe get some quick passes to, get him the ball in space, and then every once in a while throw a deep pass to him to try to utilize that speed. He's also going to be the kick returner and punt returner, so keep an eye on him on special teams. He gives them a little bit of a threat there. And then, as I mentioned, Irvin Phillips is a guy that his role is sort of expanding as the season goes. He's a guy that can take some handoffs and run the ball on some jet sweeps, on traditional running plays, but also that they try to throw the ball to on quick outs, on, you know, like I said, wheel routes, on slants. They try to get him the ball when they do run screens. They don't run him a ton, but he's a guy that they will try to target on those.
Someone sort of like a Percy Harvin type.
Yeah. That's
basically like the way that Urban Meyer used Percy Harvin.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they've recruited a couple of guys in this class and that they're talking to in 2017 as well, and that's what they tell them, you know, that you're going to be playing a Percy Harvin type of a role when they recruit guys to play H-back, and that's something that's worked for them on the recruiting trail a little bit. So that's kind of what you'll see. You'll see him be the jack of all trades there. Their tight end position is not someone that might catch one or two passes for, you know, 8 to 15, maybe 20 if you're lucky yards. Not really a focal point of the offense, so not much to worry about there.
So let's go ahead and move over to the other side of the football here and talk about the Syracuse defense. Can you fill us in a little bit on what to expect from Syracuse on the defensive side? Now, you know, I think a lot of Florida State fans, they haven't seen really anything of Syracuse except for maybe some of that LSU game. And I think the one thing that surprised a lot of people is that LSU was able to hang in that game, in part because they were able to handle LSU defensively better than people expected against Leonard Fournette, who eventually had a couple long runs and sort of broke the game open along with a couple deep passes. But LSU was able to compete, Syracuse was able to compete with LSU through most of that game. How has that continued over the course of the rest of the year? And what's Syracuse doing that that Florida State fans can expect coming into this game?
Well, one of the reasons they were able to have success in that game against LSU is because they like to pressure the quarterback, and they try to get to him as quickly as possible. They were able to get to Brandon Harris on a number of occasions and, you know, force some quick decisions, force him to throw the ball away. Ron Thompson is their best pass rusher from the defensive line perspective, and I think he's a future NFL guy, might leave after this year if he keeps playing the way he has been. But, you know, they like to bring pressure. They're going to blitz their linebackers. They're going to blitz safeties, a corner every once in a while to try to make the quarterback uncomfortable. They did that to Everett Golson last year when he was at Notre Dame, and they forced him into 5 turnovers when coming into that game. He hadn't really turned it over, and then he continued to turn it over the rest of the year. So they're familiar with him, and I think that will – that'll help them a little bit. You know, obviously it's a completely different offense, and you know, his role is different.
And as of right now, it's not even clear that Golson's actually going to be the starter and is going to play in this game against Syracuse. He got banged up against your side of the fence. He got banged up against Georgia Tech, and Sean McGuire has taken the bulk of the reps with the ones this week. So, that's actually something interesting to watch from the Syracuse side, just for the record.
Yeah, and if they do go with McGuire, I would expect Syracuse to actually bring more pressure because he's not as mobile, obviously, as Golson is. And that's something that Syracuse will try to use to their advantage. But regardless of who the quarterback is, they're still going to bring pressure. It just might depend on who is the quarterback, what type of pressure they bring and where they bring it from. But, you know, like I said, they're an aggressive defense. Now, you mentioned the LSU game. They had some pretty good moments in that game. Leading up to that game, they had been very good, forcing a lot of turnovers. Since then, it's really dropped off. They had some pretty good moments against Virginia. They were really bad against South Florida, and they had some good moments against Pittsburgh where, you know, they got a couple of turnovers and were covering much better down the field. Their secondary has been the huge weakness in this defense this season so far. They were better with moving Julian Wiggum to safety and moving Cordell Hudson into one of the starting cornerback spots. He's been pretty good in coverage, so they've improved there in the last couple of games, but it's still a big question mark. Their safeties have been so-so this year. One of the safeties, I should say, Antoine Cordy from the strong safety spot, it has been one of their better defensive players. A lot of youth and a lot of inexperience on defense, but pressure is going to be the name of the game. But again, vulnerable in the secondary, vulnerable to the big play, and then the bubble screen, quick passes, those type of things Syracuse has really struggled with, mainly because their tackling hasn't been that great. So if Florida State can get the ball in their hands of some of their speed guys on some quick passes, they've got the potential to get some big plays, because Syracuse has allowed them frequently this year. So those are kind of some things I would look for if you're Florida State, is maybe try to take advantage of some of the weaknesses Syracuse has shown this year and the tendencies, which is inconsistent tackling, giving up big plays downfield, and then trying to exploit some of those pressure packages Syracuse is going to bring.
Yeah, and that's where not having Dalvin Cook, who is, you know, who's been the big play source for Florida State this year, has been is kind of a big deal, big loss, particularly in this kind of game where, again, Fournette had a few long runs against this defense, which is not the fastest in the world, but they do play hard up front and generally pretty sound in their run fits and such. But they've been vulnerable to the big play both through the pass and the air at different points. So before we wrap up then, what then do you see happening in this game from the Syracuse side, knowing that Dalvin Cook is not going to play in this game with the ankle injury that he sustained against Georgia Tech, and obviously he already had a bit of a hamstring issue, and then the potential that Everett Golson is either limited or doesn't play as well. What do you see happening in this game from the Syracuse side? And what is the expectation from in-house on the Syracuse side?
I think it depends on who you ask. If you ask Syracuse fans, honestly, they're still expecting Syracuse to go down and get blown out by Florida State. I don't think they're expecting 56-3 like it was a couple of years ago when Florida State had one of the better teams in college football in recent memory in the last several years. That team was unbelievably talented.
Yeah, there was just a graphic that was going around Twitter that showed that of the starters on that team, you know, the starting lineups in the national championship game, all 11 of Florida State's starting offense is presently in the NFL, several of whom are breakout players in the NFL. And then all but two of the defensive starters are presently in the NFL. And the other two, one is all ACC linebacker Terrence Smith and the other's Jalen Ramsey. So like you said, that was a talented team. We're not seeing that team going out there. You know, that team isn't walking through the tunnel on Saturday.
No. And fortunately from the Syracuse perspective, that's the case, you know, that gives them a little bit of hope, but the fan base isn't necessarily thinking that this is going to be a close game. I think there's, you know, some quiet confidence among the Syracuse program because they like what they're building. They like their young players. And I think they're excited to see what they're going to do against a team like Florida State in that type of an environment, because when they played LSU, Eric Dungy wasn't there. He was out with a concussion, and Zach Mahoney had to take the reins from the quarterback spot there. So they want to see how Eric responds to this type of a game and this type of an atmosphere. So that'll be kind of interesting to see. But from what I think is going to happen. I think Syracuse will hang around for a little bit, but ultimately Florida State will pull away in the second half and make it, you know, 3-touchdown game, 4-touchdown game, something like that. But Syracuse kind of makes it interesting for a half and hangs around and shows some flashes here and there of being better. Their offense, I think, has under Coach Lester has been pretty good. They've got some pieces that I like that I've mentioned. Dungy, Fredericks, Ishmael. Offensive line is starting to come together. Phillips. Their defense, I think, will ultimately be their undoing in this one because of the things we mentioned, their propensity to give up the big play and all the speed that Florida State has on the outside. But if they're facing McGuire rather than Golson, I think that helps the Syracuse defense because of the pressure they're going to try to bring. It'll be really interesting to see how they defend the run without Cook in there. But I think Florida State's too good. The fact that it's in their place, obviously, is a factor. But, I wouldn't be surprised if Syracuse makes it somewhat interesting for a half or so.
Yeah, and given the way that this Florida State team is so young and has been so inconsistent, there's no reason not to expect that. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Now, one last thing. I know that was supposed to be the last thing, but well, I'm going to put you on one more spot here.
All right.
I was on, as you were, I was on the Mike Lindsay show, Lindsay show on Wednesday.
Yes.
And he sprung the question on me of whether or not I thought Scott Schaefer should get another year, given where Syracuse is at this point. I know what my answer to that question was. What's your answer to the question of the where the Syracuse program is right now and whether or not you think that Schaefer should get another year at this point, and this being his third year in the job?
Yeah, I'll answer that kind of in a couple of different ways. Full disclosure, I'm a Scott Schaefer guy. I like him. I think he's a good coach, and I think if you're going to build something at Syracuse, it's with a guy like Scott Schaefer that you have to be patient with and let him build through his recruiting and getting his guys in there, et cetera, and that takes time. This isn't a situation where it's Alabama pre-Nick Saban where you bring Nick Saban in and 2 years later they're competing for a national title. It's a different situation when you're building something at Syracuse than you are, you know, a place like that. So I think with the fact that he's got a true freshman running back, a true freshman quarterback, sophomore wide receiver, a true freshman and redshirt freshman all over his defense and sophomores there as well, he's got a sophomore captain on his defense, four redshirt freshmen that are starting on defense. I think you've got to let him develop that talent. I think, you know, his contract is for 5 years, so that gives him 2 more years after this one. I would, at a minimum, give him that time. And if, you know, you're in year 5 and you're still at situations like you are right now where you're 3-4 and a bowl game seems a lot less likely than it maybe did early in the season or before the season started, then I understand making a move. But the other way I'll answer it is if Greg Robinson gets 4 years, I think everybody should.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. The thing that I was my take on this, just to be fair on that, my take on this is, does Syracuse really want to get involved in competing on this particular job market of all things? I mean, the job market, the coaching market is already there's already several Power Five jobs and a couple good ones that are out there this year. So the question is, how are you going to go out and get a guy that's better than Scott Schaefer at this point when some of these other jobs are out there? So it may be prudent to wait if for no other reason than for that reason. So it's going to be I think it's going to be interesting. I suspect that they'll give him another year. I think they absolutely should give him at least one more year. So we'll see how that goes. And obviously, you know, how they do the rest of this year, and that includes on Saturday, is going to have some impact on that. But either way, my guest has been Mike McAllister from QsNation.com. Mike, thanks for joining us, and looking forward to a good one on Saturday.
Absolutely, it should be fun.
And once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on the Seminole Sports Radio Network. I'm Jason Staples, and it's hard to improve on that preview from Mike McAllister, flagging several things that Florida State fans should be looking at, several key matchups in this game. I do think that propensity to give up big plays on shorter passes and some difficulties tackling guys on bubble screens and that sort of thing is a pretty big Achilles heel to have against this Florida State team, given the presence of Kermit Whitfield in particular. I think this is one of those games that I would expect to see Whitfield actually excel in. But I think this is actually going to be one of those games where we see more of the youth for the first time on offense this season. I mean, some of that has to do with Cook being out. Some of that has to do with the young players actually having taken a step forward this week. Jaquez Patrick running with the ones a good portion of this week, and the staff was more happy with what kind of effort they were getting from him this week than what they had been in previous weeks. Where, it's one of those things. It's difficult with young players to make sure that they're getting their assignments right, to make sure that they understand the pass protections and things like that at that running back position, to make sure that they understand that they can't take plays off, that they have to run each play hard. And that, you know, they can't, you've got guys that come in at a high school with an entitlement complex. It's tough to get those guys to quite understand the level of intensity that you have to play with at the college level. I remember when I got to Florida State back in 2000, I was blown away. It was a totally different world in terms of just the play by play intensity. I mean, I thought that I'd played intense in high school, that I'd focused and really played hard, but it was just a different level. It's a different world when you get to that level of college football. And it takes just about everybody a little while to learn how to compete play in, play out like that. And some of the freshmen are starting to get there. Jimbo Fisher mentioned after today's practice, again, I'm recording this on Thursday night, that Jaquez Patrick had really taken a step forward on that. That's very encouraging news. And of course, it's, right on time in terms of Cook being out this week. And then there's some of the younger wide receivers should be back in action or getting close. George Campbell, his hand is back to where, looks like he's going to be able to catch a little bit more consistently in practice. And, until he was catching consistently, he wasn't going to be on the field there. You got to make sure the guys are running routes well. And some of these younger guys are starting to get to where they've got enough time to where they're understanding what they're being asked to do. So when you run a fade, you run it to this spot. You run it this way. You high point it this way. And you don't put your team in a position where, when you're on the goal line and you've got to run, a post pattern to this spot, you don't end up cutting it short or doing things that could potentially cause interceptions. I think we're going to see some of the younger guys in this game at wide receiver. We're obviously going to see Jaquez Patrick. I mean, Vickers is not going to take the entire load in this game. So those are some things to look for. And it is in a good matchup to do this against a Syracuse team that's decent, but probably not good enough to beat you. Now, the other really interesting thing, and I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, it's not clear that Everett Golson is actually going to start this game. And in fact, I from what I've been informed, my source on this does not actually think that Everett Golson is going to be the starting quarterback in this game. He thinks that Sean McGuire is actually going to get the start. Not sure whether Golson's going to play. That doesn't mean that McGuire is going to be the starter against Clemson. But it does mean that basically Sean McGuire took all the snaps at the ones this week, pretty much, all of them. Golson has been second team all week. When he played, he took a day off at the beginning of the week because he got so banged up against Georgia Tech. So it looks like Sean McGuire is going to be the quarterback. Now, if McGuire's the quarterback, you're going to see a very different kind of offense as well. I mean, again, we've talked about this in the past. Jimbo Fisher's offense is maybe the most flexible offense in the country in terms of the things that he does to accommodate his personnel and to adjust and simplify and add or subtract different things depending on who he has on the field. And with McGuire, you're going to get much more of a drop back play action down the field kind of passing offense, because that's what he's able to do. He's a big play type guy where he's going to throw the ball down the field not really high percentage stuff, but he's going to be, you know, he's got a big arm and can push the ball down the field and maybe get you into some seams and things like that down the field on vertical stuff. So that, I would expect to see a little bit more of that. Now, defensively, I just don't think Syracuse has enough to threaten Florida State in terms of the big plays, again, to beat Florida State in this game more than likely. I mean, it would take a couple turnovers. It would take some breaks. Now, again, after last week, Florida State fans know that that does not mean Florida State's not going to win this, or Florida State's not going to lose this game, because in college football, any time you turn the ball over, or you settle for field goals in the red zone repeatedly, or you have, you know, just different little mistakes here and there, you can get yourself beat. But I think this is a good matchup to see, sort of see where things are at this point, to use some of those young players. And I think on the defensive side, I just don't think Syracuse can handle Florida State's defensive line through the entire game. Florida State's got some depth on the inside. LSU ultimately wore them down on the interior. And I think Florida State's secondary is actually better than anybody, including LSU, any secondary that they've seen, at least at the cornerback position. I think LSU safeties are better than what Florida State's putting out there right now because of the youth, because of the injuries there. But at the cornerback position, I think Florida State can handle their wide receivers by and large. So, you know, I think this is a game where Florida State should, and again, that doesn't mean they will, but they should win still by double digits. I'm not sure they cover this spread because of Dalvin Cook being out. But and also, we don't know what we're going to get in terms of McGuire playing rather than Golson. So this is, as every Florida State game seemingly in the last couple of years, is going to be an interesting game. There's something to look for, lots of things to watch for, especially when you're talking about some of the young guys that are going to play. But it's hard to know what to expect. So welcome to Florida State football the last couple of years. This is what you're going to get in rebuilding seasons. But, you know, bottom line is it's really difficult to go undefeated in college football. It's very difficult to consistently win, you know, 9-10 games. And Florida State continues to be in position to do that. Though the young talent is going to have to take a step forward given the injury situation. And this is something also, before I wrap up, a lot of people seem to be forgetting how many key injuries Florida State has had this season. I mean, we knew coming into the season that Florida State couldn't afford injuries at the linebacker position in particular, and that there was a young wide receiving core, that the running back position, that they needed the bell cows at the running back position to define the offense with Cook and Pender. Pender gets a collapsed lung. You lose your top linebacker, which is where you couldn't lose anybody. You've got you have some depth at safety, but you lose two of your starters there at safety and star. This team has had a lot of injuries to deal with. The offensive line has been shuffled and reshuffled all year because of injuries. And I'm not going to actually talk about the places where injuries haven't happened so far, because some of you will probably yell at me about a jinx. But by and large, this team has been a little bit snake bitten in terms of injury this year. It's more similar to the 2012 and 2011 seasons in that regard than the 2013 and 2014 seasons. And there's some reason for that. When you have younger teams, a lot of times you're going to have more injury issues because their bodies aren't quite as ready. And also you don't have quite as much depth as when you have a little bit older team. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also follow Mike McAllister from Q's Nation, who joined us earlier on the show, at McAllister Scout. That's at McAllister Scout. You can, of course, follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio as well. And make sure to check our material over at NoleDigest.com, where we've got all sorts of preview materials for this game. Lots of discussions on the premium board with things that I don't even necessarily talk about on this podcast. And of course, make sure to catch our next podcast, which is going to cover the Syracuse game in retrospect. I'm Jason Staples, and this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Thanks for listening. I made this.